Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everyone. I think there's been some sugar consumed in this room tonight. On behalf of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, it's my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for your support. Before we launch into things this evening, I do also have some more people to thank. Without the support of Hazel and Dewey, this event would not be taking place this evening. Jenna Miles. Jenna is who started the ball rolling in getting Deb Perlman to come to Denver. She also assembled the wonderful gift bags that you've received. And then she reached out to our friends at the Humble Pie Store and asked Tamara to participate. So Tamara's been baking away, producing recipes from the cookbook today. So would you please join me in thanking Hazel and Dewey and the Humble Pie Store. And please do visit Hazel and Dewey, 70 South Broadway, and the Humble Pie Store is on 3rd and Allotti. But the reason that Jenna and Tamara have worked so hard to help us assemble this great crowd this evening is to celebrate the publication of the Smitten Kitchen Cookbook. So without further ado, would you please join me in welcoming to Denver the cook, the photographer, and the creator of the blog, Ms. Deb Perlman.
Hi. There are a lot of you. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for coming out on this disgusting evening. I understand this to be gross. I thought it snowed every day in Colorado, but apparently this is a big deal. It's okay. I didn't even bring my snow boots, so if you came to make fun of me, it's fine. I understand. Anyway, but thank you so much for coming out. I'm so happy to be in Denver. I've never been here before. And I wish I was staying longer, but what I've seen of it today is beautiful, and it's so sunny, and it's just mild, and then it snows, and it just goes away, which is awesome, because in New York, it snows, and then it stays, and it gets blacker, and then it becomes, like, murky, and then you have these slush puddles that go up to your knees, and they look like street though, so you put... Have you guys been to New York in the winter? Okay, you know what I'm talking about. Street juice, we call it. Anyway, it's delicious. Anyway, I thought I'd do a little song and dance. I think we should all be really grateful that I'm neither going to do a song nor a dance. You're not rolling your eyes enough. Okay, so... This is where I'm supposed to talk about, like, my life thus far, but I find that really boring. I'm sorry. I think it's unhealthy to be able to talk about yourself for a really long bit of time. So I'm going to speak very briefly about how maybe Smitten Kitchen and the book came to be, and then what I really love doing is answering questions. I will answer any question you have, except for when I'm going to have another baby, because I know my mom put you up to it, and I'm not falling for it. So I'm just going to talk a little bit, and then just ask me anything, because I love answering questions. This is what I do. Anyway. So I started blogging pre-Smitten Kitchen. It was just Smitten in 2003. And in 2003, if you wanted to have a weblog, you just went to Typepad or Blogspot and you just started typing. You did not need to have a focus. You didn't need to, you could talk about anything. And so I did. I talked about sidewalk cracks and like being a klutz and about going on bad dates. And I mean, I was like, it was really boring stuff. And, but I was going on a lot of bad dates and I thought I would write about that a little bit, but that didn't really last because one of my first readers was the guy who became my husband 2 years later. So ixnay on the dating. And then I started just Well, you know, I can kind of go on and on about things, and I did that for a couple years, but increasingly, my love of cooking was taking over. I've always liked to cook, but I don't know. I mean, it's like when you're, if you're single and you're living in an apartment and it's just you, it's really not as much fun to cook as it should be. You generally, I mean, I had like this walk-up apartment. Groceries were so expensive. You end up making something and then you're stuck eating it for like 2 weeks because it's like for like a large family and you're just, and then you have to wash all the dishes yourself. And so if you are young and you do not cook very much, I just do not feel bad about it. I think it's completely understandable. So that's about where I was. Even though I loved to cook, I had very little motivation to deal with the whole process. But once I had met my husband, I had a dishwasher, I had a bag carrier, I had somebody who told me the food was good even when it wasn't. So it became a lot more fun to cook. And I was slowly just becoming obsessed with finding, I guess, a collection of recipes. I don't know if it's just me, but I felt like when I hit adulthood, I liked to cook, but I didn't really know how to cook all the things that I wanted to be able to. Like, I could look up a recipe for roast chicken, but I wanted to make the best roast chicken. Like, I wanted the roast chicken that was going to be worth the groceries, the walk-up, all that deal. So anyway, I started Smitten Kitchen in the fall of 2006 as a place to warehouse these recipes that I was considering my go-to recipes. And if you make dinner tonight for your friends and family, and you make roast chicken, and it is amazing because you are an amazing cook, and everyone's going to like fall over and gush, and they're going to say, oh my God, you are such a good cook, and I think you should open a restaurant. And with all due respect, I think that's a terrible reason to open a restaurant. I'm not saying that you might not have a great restaurant inside you, but I'm not sure that being really good at cooking for a small group of people is a good reason to open a restaurant. Along the same non-logic, if you have a food blog and you have like 3 or 4 readers that are not your mom, I actually thought all those clicks were my mom for a very long time, but this is definitely wrecking that theory. But if you have a food blog and you have like 3 or 4 readers, pretty soon someone's going to come up to you and say, you should write a cookbook. And I said, with all due respect, that is a terrible reason to write a cookbook. And I had this whole like speech about why I thought writing a cookbook was a terrible idea and why I would never write a cookbook. And so there we are. The end. I know it sounds weird to be resistant to writing something that I have such a large and beloved collection of, but I just really like the web. I like the fact that I can just make whatever I feel like that day and put it up the next day, and I can have 17 pictures if I want, if a post needs that, and I can go on, which, you know, you can see I need that. And my favorite part about the web is that I can have conversations with people. We can have comments and we can have this back and forth exchange. And as far as I was concerned, cookbooks had none of that. But I heard more and more some concern that maybe I would never write a cookbook. And I didn't really think this was a big deal, but there was this one night, and this is kind of a terrible story, but I'm just going to go there. And I was meeting two friends. One's a cookbook writer and one's a cookbook editor. And we are not friends because of that. It was just a coincidence. But I was meeting them for dinner one night. And when I got there, they were hanging out without me. Like, they had been there for a while. And I was like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, oh, we've been sitting around having a drink trying to figure out how to talk you into writing a cookbook. And I was like, you too? God. Anyway, around that time, I got pregnant. And I'm sure I'm not the first person to say this, but, you know, it can make you a little bit crazy, all those hormones. And I was, like, convinced that my son was never going to know what his mom did if he didn't have something he could hold in his hands. Like I said, this is not a logical process. None of this is reasonable. I'm not terribly proud of this, but the fact is that I decided when I was, like, 36 weeks pregnant that I was going to write a cookbook. And I was going to get it done in 6 months because what's a newborn? No big deal. They sleep all the time, right? I'm sorry. Is anyone pregnant right now? I want to apologize because when I meet you, I'm going to be like, it's okay. They sleep all the time. And I'm lying because I say that stuff all the time, and it's only a little true. Sorry. So, but I had this other plan, because I was still, even though I decided I was going to do it, I was kind of fighting it a little bit. So I decided that I would have this elaborate list of demands that nobody would ever meet, and then I wouldn't actually have to do it. Very passive-aggressive and mature of me. The first on my ridiculous rider was going to be that I wanted to have a photo with each recipe, because I don't know about you, but when I'm looking through a cookbook, I'm like, oh, that sounds really good, but I don't know what this looks like. And the truth is that half the time, if there was a photo, I would have realized that they were talking about dumplings and I thought they were talking about a stew. And so it often is very helpful to have a photo, especially if you're not good at reading directions like me. So I wanted to have a photo with each recipe because that's the way I do it on the site. And I wanted to have process photos wherever I could fit them in. And this doesn't sound that revolutionary, but, you know, it kind of makes it more expensive and you just don't see it that much in cookbooks. My next ridiculous demand was that I wanted to be able to have these long intros like I have on the site. I just wanted to be able to go on and on. Sorry. and I wanted to be able to write recipes not in this, like, proper editorial cookbook writing voice. I wanted to do it the way I talk because I think that's more helpful, and I don't think anyone is really hoping to be severely educated in the kitchen. I think we just want to be walked through things. And my last, and this was like the final one that I knew I was definitely not going to have to write this cookbook, was I had heard of this thing called lay flat binding. And I don't know if you've ever been in the kitchen with a cookbook that closes on you and your hands are full of dough and then you open them and then it closes again and then they get stuck together and then you open them 6 months later and now you have a torn up cookbook. I think about these things. Anyway, so I wanted lay flat binding and I was like, that's it. I'm definitely not going to have to write this book. And that's not what happened. And then, of course, I was so insistent that I was going to be able to write a cookbook with a newborn because they're easy. And this was no big. I was just going to get a babysitter for like an hour or two today. And it was whatever. I got this. I insisted that they write it into the contract that I would have it done in 6 to 9 months. Don't do that, guys. 3 years later, the book is here. I kind of refer to it as my second baby. It's 336 pages, clocking in at 2.8 pounds. I think she's a beaut. I hope you like her, too. Anyway, I would love to answer any questions you have. I guess I can answer the first one, which is that, no, I did not bring Jacob or Alex with me. I would love to. They would have so much fun here, but another trip. I took them. They came to Chicago with me, and Jacob tried to steal all your books. It was really awkward. I don't know if you've ever tried to reason with a three-year-old before about that it's not their book just because it looks like a book they have at home. Everyone's like, he's like holding on. They're like, he's so cute. is he going to give it back? I'm like, so I haven't taken him to too many signings since then, but maybe in another year or two. Anyway, did anyone have any questions? Hi.
You took all the pictures?
I'm going to repeat the question just in case somebody didn't hear, and also because we're podcasting, and I want to make sure that the recording, which is just through this mic. So I was asked if I took all the pictures, and I did.
How'd you learn to take beautiful food photos?
I was asked how I learned to take beautiful food photos. Thank you. I did not learn. I have no idea what the buttons on my camera do. I just, like, fake it. I seriously, like, I have a window, which helps, you know, like, natural light, and I just try to keep things really simple. And I have a pretty sharp lens, and that's about it. I'm not, like, I enjoy taking photos, and I like taking clear, sharp, that's the goal. But I don't have any, like, the thing that real photographers do is they can make a photo happen. I just, like, you know, hope it happens, go with whatever works. But I also thought it was going to be a really bad idea for me to take the photos for the book because I thought that that should be left to a professional. But I'm kind of glad that I did, even though it's a bit more work. I thought it was nice for it to have the same look as the cookbook. And can you imagine how awful? Like, I would have been such a control freak if somebody else tried to take pictures of me. I'm like, no, 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 you need to come in over here. So it's probably for the best. Hi. That's a great question. What's your name?
Joan.
Joan asked if I can add something to the website as a place to ask questions, because we were talking about this conversation that's missing in a cookbook, and I would love to. And the truth is that it's just, I don't have any help on this site, and so because I've been like running around book touring, like it's the kind of thing that would have happened really simple if I would just stop being so stubborn and just hire somebody to help me out with the site, but I'm a control freak and therefore everyone suffers. no, but I'd really like to. I'm looking into it. I would really love to have a place where people can ask. In the meanwhile, you got me, so ask me anything. By the way, long before I wrote my cookbook, when I was just maybe thinking about it, I went to a cookbook event and it was just a few people in the room, and the very first thing was like, I made this recipe from your book, and it was awful. And I turned to my husband, and I said, I am never writing a cookbook. And if I do, I will never do a book tour. But it turns out, come at me. I got this. I'm like, it turns out all those years of answering questions and comments, I'm like, you know, I think we can. I can handle it. And if I can, I'll just hide behind the podium until it goes away. Were there any other... Hi.
Hi. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, I had nothing to do with that.
But you showed up, and that was part of the reason they thought I should come.
So, my question is, you in the book, you write a pork chop recipe, and you talk about growing up Jewish.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm just curious about how your Jewish identity sort of impacts your cooking and your presence in the world.
What was your name?
I'm Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. So Sarah asked about me having a pork chop recipe in the book. As I am Jewish, my husband's Jewish, and my son is Jewish, and a lot of Jewish people do not eat pork. And even if they do eat pork, they do not advertise it in a cookbook. They also do not have recipes on their website where you take pork and you soak it in milk and mix it with cheese and call it stuffed cabbage. So I understand. It's one of these long, complicated discussions where I always want to be very careful about the way I speak about it, just because I have a tremendous amount of respect for people who follow the laws of kashrut, but just my husband and I talked about it, and it's just not something that we are interested in. And I always feel like if I'm like, I don't want to sound dismissive of anything that's really important to somebody, but for me, just... it wasn't where I was going to go. And I could get more into nitty-gritty details, but like I said, this is really important to some people, and so I don't want to be like, well, I looked at it, and it was like no big deal, you know, so that's not really fair. But it's not something I took lightly, but at the same time, I also was... I mean, for me, I'm not like a sort of halfway person. So it was sort of like if I was going to eat pork, I was going to be okay cooking pork and I was going to be okay sharing pork recipes. And I actually was a little worried my son was going to get kicked out of his Jewish preschool when the book came out because they're kind of kosher. But so far, I think we're good. But anyway, I was actually a little bit nervous. Sometimes they're like, what's your website? I'm like, just don't go today. There's pork up top. Like, just... I didn't do a very good job answering that, but basically we're just not kosher, but I totally understand that it's important to some people. Hi.
Hi. Why do you like to cook? Does your family, anyone in your family like to cook? Where did you learn to love it so much?
I was asked why I like to cook. What was your name?
Gloria.
Gloria asked me why I like to cook, and did it come from my family? or something else. And actually, it comes from a far less interesting place. I'm really, really picky. And I, like, always want things to be a very specific way. And I bet you guys never want to cook for me now. You're like, I am never inviting her over. I've always had, this is like the obsessive streak where I have this like idea in my head. I'll be like, gosh, roast chicken is so boring. And that's the third time I've talked about roast chicken. We're going to move on, I promise. But I was like, roast chicken's so boring. I think I don't like it. And then I challenge myself to make it in a way that I would love. And pretty much every recipe in the book or on the website has come from this place of like, I thought I didn't like this. And here I challenge myself. That said, in my family, we have a lot of enthusiastic cooks. I wouldn't say any are quite as crazy as I am, but my mother did teach herself to cook from Julia Child's Mastering the Art of French Cooking. So I probably was raised with a little more quiche and asparagus than your average Jewish girl from suburban New Jersey. I remember my mom cooking bœuf bourguignon for, like, company and just thinking it smelled like the most amazing thing on earth. And then, of course, I was a vegetarian for a bunch of years, which is really where the mushroom bourguignon came from. So it's my grandmother was an incredible baker. If you've ever made the chocolate chip sour cream cinnamon coffee cake on the site, and if you haven't, I highly recommend it. It's my grandmother's recipe, and it's just one of my favorites. So there was a lot of enthusiastic cooking, and also I feel like from home I learned a lack of fear of cooking. Like if I was like, let's make bread, nobody ever said, yeast is scary, I don't know how to do this. We just did it. We just opened up a cookbook and tried it. So I hope to have the same thing at home for my kid. So at least he wouldn't. I just think it's important that we're not afraid in the kitchen, that you should feel like you can tackle anything. That was a long answer, sorry. Hi. Congratulations. Are you why aren't you napping?
And so as a result, I got a part-time job, which is great. And my other half of my life I've dedicated to this food blog that I opened a month before I finished school, which was a mistake because it took over my life and not my reading. So my question is, how would you suggest I publicize it?
What was your name? Stacey. And what's the name of your blog? From casebook to cookbook.com.
.wordpress.com.
That's how you publicize it. but the question, just so everybody heard, was how would you publicize your blog and how would you? So I feel like there's the correct answer and then there's what I did. So I'm going to give you both. The correct one would be tell people about it, bring it up. If you have friends that are into cooking, tell them to tell their friends about it. I feel like that's the traditional route. But for me, I am weird about self-promotion, and I was just never comfortable with it. Which is so weird because I'm standing in front of a lot of people right now. But what I mean is that I never was like, hey, I have a food blog. Like, that was just not me. Like, I never did business cards. I never went to conferences. That just might be me being weird and awkward. My belief was that if it was good, people were going to find it. And if it wasn't, then whatever. I would still enjoy doing it because I enjoyed it. So what I think is really great when you have a new website is to just give it a little bit of time to get its own legs. And in that time, before you really have readers, because I firmly believe that any website regularly updated with good content, the traffic always goes up. You'll always have more readers each month than the one before. But that time in the beginning when it's a little bit quieter is a great time to sort of get your own sea legs and figure out what you want to do. It's a great time to sort of work on your voice and what you want to talk about. So by the time you really have a handful of people showing up every day and then larger handfuls and then they're showing up each hour, you'll know what you're doing and you'll feel like you're at home there. So I think it's great to let people know about it, but it's nice to have a little bit of content there, you know, a good 10, 20, or even a few months worth of posts up there before you start telling people. So when people come over, there's more for them to see and they can get to know you a little bit. Hi.
As a writer of a now defunct blog, I was going to ask you how you stay motivated in the early days to actually post to it, because I'm like you and I don't really want all these, I mean, I want people to read it, but it's like I was doing it for me, but then the other person I was writing it with was like a SEO expert, and so we had all these people, and then I got scared, kind of. Aww. How do you, like, keep motivation to, like, keep writing?
What is your name?
Stephanie.
So Stephanie asked me how I stay motivated to continue writing my blog. Well, I would say that this is probably a lot of motivation. But even before this, I have always been very careful to try to make it as fun for myself as possible. Like, if there was a part that I really didn't like, I tried not to do it. For example, I think it would probably be a better site if I ever kept to a posting schedule, but then I started feeling pressure to put things up that I thought weren't ready yet, and sometimes you're just having a crazy week, and I don't want to put up something mediocre. I want to put up something good. And so I decided I wasn't going to have a posting schedule. And if I wasn't thrilled with the photos on something, you know, maybe I just wouldn't run it, or maybe I would, if I didn't feel like, you know, just to kind of not make it, there's no right way to do it. There's only the way that's the most like you. And so any part that you were doing it because of somebody else's idea of what a good blog is are the parts that you're probably going to stop liking. And if you haven't updated in 4 months, you can still start, and you don't need to start with an apology. Within the age of RSS, people only find out when you've updated. And so you can just drop back in and start again. So that was, for me, it was really about just trying to keep it enjoyable and take out as many of the parts that weren't fun as possible. Hi. I was asked what I had for dinner tonight. Today doesn't count. When I'm on the road, I have this sort of weird thing where I don't get proper meals, but I did actually meet an old friend I met through blogging for a late lunch, and we went to, I'm going to say it wrong, Osteria? It's like one of these words that I can type, like, no problem, but if I say it out loud, it just always sounds right. So, Marco. And then, so we just got it. I just had, like, a sound. But last night, I actually made dinner, and I was only home for one day between trips, and I was like, I am not cooking. That's nice. We're going out for pizza. And then I don't know what happened, but, like, chicken was coming out, and there was broccoli, and I got this rice cooker, which I do not know. In case you were wondering if it's difficult to use a rice maker, no, but I did mess up on it. So we had bad rice. It was kind of gummy. And we had some roasted broccoli. And then I made fried chicken. I don't know what happened. I just was, like, going to bread them and bake them. And then I was like, maybe I could batter them and fry them. And then I did. And it was really good. I think I made, like, chicken fried chicken tenders. And I was just trying to, I was thinking it would reheat well for the next couple nights when I'm not home. But then my son was just pulling the outside off and not eating. So I bet you wish you were there. It sounds really delicious, right? But it got me thinking that I should really do a homemade Chick-fil-A sandwich, because that's totally what it was in the end. Just need some pickles and a bun and a slice of tomato. And no homophobia. Hi. Hi. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
As many as possible, and what
is it? And two is, how did you choose which recipes went into the book? Because, like, one of my favorite recipes that you did isn't in the
book, so. I know. I'm sorry about that.
It's not your blog, but I was wondering how you chose which ones you shared in the cookbook.
Okay, so what was your name?
Oh, Joey.
Hi, Joey.
Like the boy's name, yeah.
Obviously not a boy. Okay, so Joey asked if I have a favorite spice and that I use over and over again, and I would say I'm really kind of into smoked paprika. I got really into, like, the Spanish pimenton. You can buy it hot or sweet. The sweet isn't really sweet, but you can put it on eggs or potatoes. I would say even more of an ingredient crutch for me, though, is Dijon mustard. I was one of those people who thought I didn't like mustard, and once I realized I was wrong, oh my God, I have like 4 jars of Dijon, like, right now. There's a brand of Dijon, I probably have it. And then there's the Chorus, and, like, that's just 4 of the smooth yellow stuff in the fridge. And I was getting to this point with the cookbook where I had to put it away because I was putting it in every recipe. It's just such a nice way to get, like, a little kick, and it goes really well with a lot of vegetables. And the second question Joey asked was, how did I decide which recipes went in the book and which went on the site? And it was not a scientific process. It was a little bit of guesswork. And I would say on this site, I often lean towards things that I think people will immediately love. It's hard not to with that sort of salted caramel brownies. And I felt like in the book I was making a lot of, salted caramel brownies, chocolate peanut butter cake. I mean, it's hard to resist the fact that I know a lot of people will be excited about it. I also on the site will lean towards things that have a shorter season. Like if I want to talk about sour cherries, I may not devote a cookbook recipe to it. I love it, but the season's 2 weeks. It almost seems unfair to put it in something you could buy all year, or especially something that comes out in late October. And the book, it was things I just thought were there's a good word for it, and it's not coming to me. Amazing. I've run out of words. something with almost more longevity, with more legs, or maybe something more like I thought was a more interesting study of something I hadn't seen before. Those were the things, or something that I felt like, although I love cooking seasonally, I didn't want it. There are tomatoes and zucchini and things like that in there, but nothing that was too hard to get most places. So those were the main things. And then there were other times that I loved. I had two versions of something, and I loved both, and I didn't know what to do. So I would play this game with my editor and agent, and we would just vote which one. I know. Wouldn't you like to believe it's more serious? But no, we just voted. So it was a little bit of guesswork and a little bit of just trying to figure out what works well in a book and what might do better on a site where people can immediately make it. Hi, in the yellow sweater. I know I'm like not seeing the back.
My question is, do you feel territorial about your recipes? Like I know you have in a lot of your past blogs, you kind of adapted recipes, and now a lot of food bloggers are stealing yours.
Can I get your name?
Oh, Jamie.
Jamie. Jamie asked me if I ever feel territorial about my recipes. Like, do I feel weird when people adapt it, or maybe don't list me as a credit and make it anyway? And I'm actually pretty relaxed about it. I think that what makes cooking great is that we can pass it around. I think it's nice to give credit for sources, and there are a lot of times where I talk about getting inspiration from someplace, even if the recipe has nothing to do with it, because it inspired me. And I think it would be sort of sad to be like, well, I guess I'm never going to get a book deal if I give credit to outside sources. Like, that's like a terrible, very small mentality. I think what's really great about cooking is that we can all share it and pass it around and add our own riffs on things. So I don't really feel territorial. There have been times where I'm like, well, that's definitely my recipe and I didn't get credit for it. But at the same time, I try not to focus on that, because like 99.9% of the stuff that's come out of my website has been so awesome and just made me so happy, such as this, that I just, it's very easy to get caught up on the bad stuff, but I'm pretty sure you guys would rather me focus my time on making new and awesomer recipes and not chasing down some missed sourcing. So I have a peaceful Zen outlook about that and exactly nothing else in my life. Hi.
Hi, Deb. My name is Joan.
Hi, Joan.
I actually lived in New York for a long time and had a tiny little kitchen, and smaller than yours, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
And lived in a studio apartment and had cooked a brunch for 25 people, and it was so great. But anyway, that really wasn't what I was.
Can I come over?
Not a question. Absolutely. I invited you over for dinner on your.
You did?
I did. And you didn't answer me back.
I'm such a jerk. Well, now you're going to uninvite me, since I told you I'm really picky and I don't.
So here's the question I have about your lemon bars.
Okay.
The pith. You're very specific about how much pith there should be. And the first time I made them, it was perfect. You know,
oh, no.
It wasn't bitter. And then the second time.
Oh, no. It turned on you?
Oh, no. Do you include the little stem part in the part of the lemon that...
Oh, I guess I didn't really think. I think I too. So the question from Joan was about my lemon bars. These are the ones in the book. The ones on the side are more like a classic lemon bar, shortbread, whatever. The ones in the book are a whole lemon bar. And they were the recipe that had caused the most gray hairs. I seriously tried to, return my book contract over those. I was so frustrated over them when I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I have a child who is 6 months old and he hasn't slept in 6 months and I can't even make lemon bars and I'm done. I think I tested that 25 times. And which is why they ended up with that specific thing, because I just couldn't figure out why sometimes they worked and sometimes they didn't. And I tried everything. I asked everyone I knew who worked with citrus. I tried organic lemons and Trader Joe's lemons and bodega lemons and street cart lemons and old lemons I found in the back of the fridge that probably shouldn't. I tried it with everything. And then I finally figured out that it was just the thickness of the peel. And now you're telling me that it wasn't. I don't know. You know what? Maybe it was just a one with a more bitter white one. You can probably, in most cases, probably take off half the peel, but if you're a little bit nervous, was the one where it was too bitter, it didn't look too thick, and so you used it all on. That might have just, there's totally possible that it was just more. It's hard because I want to close up every possible gap in a recipe, but I think that it just, there might, in some cases, be some that just are, they're being rude, the lemons. that's too bad though, because I love that. When it's good, it's so good and it's so easy. There's no zesting, there's no juicing. You just take a whole lemon and you take out the pits and then you throw it in the food processor with a lot of butter and eggs. And I mean, do I need to tell you anything else? It's awesome. So it might have just, especially if, sorry about that. Hi.
Hi, I'm Karen. I had a question about your process when you're developing a recipe, and when you try it 25 times, what do you do with all of that? Do you do it all at once, and you just end up with a whole bunch of food that you end up eating?
I'm sorry, Joan, right?
Oh, Karen.
Oh, sorry, Joan's over. Okay, so Karen. Asked what I do with all the testing rounds, because I'm just a home cook and I don't have a lot of space. Preschool drop-off. Sometimes I see the moms, they see me, and they go running in the other direction when I have a bag in my hand. I just dump things on people. If it's sweet, I have to get it out of the apartment. I might put some in the freezer, wouldn't that be fun to find in a few months? But it's more like I find it the next day, and that's not good either. So if it's savory, we try to eat it, or, eat it or freeze it. But if it's sweet, I really do try to give it away. And the other, I would say the recipe I probably tested almost as much as that lemon was the fig olive oil and sea salt challah. And it was just because I was having such a hard time, not with the flavor, but just trying to get the figs in there in a way that it wasn't unreasonably difficult for people. And I mean, there is the week, it was literally the book was due for the last time, not the first or second deadline that I missed. And I made 5 that week. And I'm telling you, preschool drop off these form. I would just dump things on people. I'm like, if you don't take this, I'm going to throw it away. And so, for the site, I'm more likely to work, I'll try one or two rounds. And then when I get tired of seeing it or I need to break, I'll just try it again in a few months. So I have a lot of things that are kind of half done that I'll come back to when we're actually for example, this fried chicken idea I was playing around with, not really going to be making fried chicken again in a week, So in 6 months when I start craving it again, I might fiddle around with it again. I'm sorry, I don't have any samples for you guys. It would have been great if I thought of it. Sometimes I'll get to a party and people, and I'll be like, oh, I forgot all that cake I have, and it just drives me crazy. Hi.
Hi, my name is Claire, and I'm also an attorney with a cooking blog.
Wow. What's it called?
SimplySweetJustice.com.
What is it called?
SimplySweetJustice.
SimplySweetJustice.com is her. That is awesome.
I'm wondering whether you prefer cooking over baking or baking over cooking. Some people seem to be have stark divisions, but other people love the
quality. Claire.
Yes.
Asked if I prefer sweet or savory cooking. And I actually don't. I don't have a single preference. Though I actually don't really eat as many sweets as it would let on by the amount of the baking tends to go elsewhere. I actually don't have a huge sweet tooth. That's like my weird dark. And the older I get, the like I have like less of a sweet tooth, and I'm definitely more focused on like the practical act of cooking at 5 o'clock with whatever I have in the fridge because my child is hungry for dinner and I had no plans. So it's a lot of I've been really doing a lot more at probably a lot more savory cooking these days, but when I want to make something sweet, I really enjoy making it from scratch. And when I do want cake, I want like good cake. And if it's your birthday, I think you should have a good cake. So I'm actually pretty evenly divided between the two. Monday through Friday, leaning towards the savory. I think, but most people choose. How many of you consider yourselves more sweet cooks? And how many of you consider yourself more savory cooks? Well, okay, definitely leaning towards the savory. I feel like in New York, I see more of an equal thing, and that's because you can just get dinner anywhere. So you really can just have a sweet cooking hobby and not ever worry about having a proper dinner because you can get it anywhere. Sorry. Hi.
Hi. What were your reasons for being a vegetarian and why did you give it up?
Gotta go. What was your name?
Katie.
Hi, Katie. Katie, I'm just joking. Right? She asked why I was a vegetarian and then why I'm not. And I was a very opinionated 13-year-old, and I became a vegetarian. And I was a vegetarian until I was 28, and I met my husband, and he ruined me. So you can blame him if you need somebody to blame. But it was a mixture of things. I didn't really care for meat. I didn't like it. I was, like I said, this is the picky thing. I just didn't like it, and I didn't like what I knew about where it came from. And so that was sort of where I was at when I was 13. That's about as complex reasoning as you're going to get from most 13-year-olds, or at least this one. So as I got older, though, as I started cooking, I had ways that I enjoyed cooking it. So it was sort of like I actually liked making it. I had ways that I, you know, that I thought it was delicious. And more importantly, I had felt like I had a lot of places where I could get good, clean, humanely raised meat. It's not something I really like preach on the site because it's expensive and I don't think anyone should feel like they have to pay up to cook, you know? I feel like everybody needs to do what's in their budget. But for me personally, one of the ways I was able to be comfortable eating meat was knowing where that I'm getting it from, like the best possible source where hopefully it's as clean as possible. And so for me, it was working out those two issues. And so I did. But I'm really glad I was a vegetarian for so long because I think it kind of permanently skewed the way I cook and that I really don't look for meat to make something a meal. I'm not used to seeing a piece of meat on a plate. It's still for me, I mean, I cook meat at best like maybe once, possibly twice in a week in the winter and even less in the summer. So I kind of like that. I have that balance.
I love the balance on your blog, honestly.
Thank you. And so it's nice, I think, to go without for a little bit so you can sort of appreciate. And then when I have it, it's like a special occasion, like steak or like a really great roast chicken. It's something special. Hi. And your name is?
My name's Tiffany.
Tiffany asked if I have any formal training in restaurant and recipe writing, and or if it's just my own style. And no, I just wing it. It's the I just wing it. I don't have any formal training. I was gonna buy the recipe writer's handbook once. I probably should have, and I didn't. That's like the worst answer ever. I'm sure it would be helpful to have a little bit more training. At the same time, I also, whenever I'm thinking of when I'm writing a recipe, I always remember, and this is totally me showing my age, like my mom being in the kitchen on the yellow foam. You know, in the kitchens, they had the long cords so you could stretch across so you could talk to your friend while you were making dinner. And she's like, oh, so you do this with the meat now, and then you do this with the potato. And they just walk you through. No, don't do that. I love that kind of way of explaining recipes. I think that conversations that we have when you're just explaining it to a friend is far more helpful than these sort of more formal correct language. And so that's usually my inspiration when I'm looking for the way to talk about something. I don't know if there is one. All the way in the back, because I am afraid I'm going to forget you and not see you otherwise. Hi. Yay! Happy belated birthday. Did somebody make it for you, or did you make it? That's a good sister-in-law. Oh my God. That's awesome. Thank you.
My question is, if I
want to
make a man fall in love with me.
I missed this. If I want to make a man fall in love with me. I was asked, if I want to make a man fall in love with me, what recipe do I need to master and have in my back pocket? You don't need anything. You are perfect, and you will, and someone's going to fall in love with you because you're awesome. Once they have, you can make them those little meatloaves, and it tends to go over well. Meatballs and spaghetti, I don't know. I wish my husband was here. He'd be like chocolate and peanut butter. I'm like, no, but what about steak? You know, that's like the he's like kind of the prototypical male about this stuff. So, I have found that people are made surprisingly happy by old school comfort foods like meatloaf and spaghetti and meatballs and homemade pizza. But mostly, they're just going to like you. Hi. Lana is also Russian. My husband is Russian. He's from the Ukraine, and I reference it a lot, though, because it's been such an influence on my cooking and eating, mostly because we go over to their house to eat so often, and, you know, there's like 80 types of pickles on the table, and then there's like the smoked fish course, and then there's the salad course, then there's the chicken course, then there's the steak course, then there's the fruit course. Then there's the dessert course. Then if you watch TV, there's the ice cream course. And this is like a Tuesday night. I had nothing in the fridge, okay? So this is just like, does that sound right? And if you can see an inch of the table, it's like you failed as a Russian hostess. my favorite thing that I've had is I love Russian dumplings. All of the little, they're much, I'm like the Russian form of pierogi. Thank you, the pelmeni. They're very, like the way we mostly know potato pierogi are very thick and heavy and large, and these are very small and delicate, and they're usually served with caramelized onions and sometimes some vinegar on top too, or sour cream. The vinegar is for the meat dumplings, and I love those too, and I'm going to get my recipe right for them soon, and because they're just so wonderful. So I love those. My mother-in-law pickles iceberg lettuce, and I love it. Like, it's so... No, this is what your sandwich is missing. It's, like, the coolest thing. You can it's, like, just lightly pickled. It's like, you know, maybe you're adding pickles to your egg salad or pickle, like you're just throwing a pickle on, like you need a slice of pickled iceberg. That's not what they use it for. They just eat it. But there's also the pickled watermelon, which is very popular. And I know you're thinking, oh, how fun, like a little sweet pickle. No, they actually do it with garlic and dill. So it's a little bit of a hurdle if you have not grown up with this. To get used to it. there's so much, though. I'm like, I don't even, there's a lot. And I'd love to sort of get stroganoff down. And my mother-in-law does, yeah, I know, I'm not so into beets. I know, I haven't been thrown out of the family yet. my mother-in-law does share her recipes. I just, She just has a very creative approach to brisket. She really does make the best brisket in the entire world. And that technique that's in the book with the slow cooker is straight from her, and it's just perfect every time. Hi. Where can we listen to the podcast?
Tatteredcover.com.
I can't believe somebody's going to listen to this again. You're not really going to listen to this one, are you?
Share it on Twitter.
Oh, I'm going to have to start speaking in complete sentences. Hi.
Hi, my name is Jen. I need to start by gushing just a little bit because I've been reading the blog forever. Not since 2006. But I think since 2007.
Thank you.
And whenever I need a recipe of having people over for dinner or something like that, I always go to Spit and Kitchen and I find something. And when you announced the cookbook, I actually said, my friend is writing a cookbook.
Oh, we are friends, Jen. We are.
I know we are.
Thank you.
Much a part of the blog and your story and all of that. But now you're a New York Times best-selling author. Are you going to move out?
Jen wants to know if I'm going to throw over my tiny kitchen for a fancy kitchen now that I must be rich because I'm on the New York Times. I'm just kidding. I have, no, I'm not going anywhere. We're actually too lazy to move. That's the only reason we've been there so long. We just signed our lease for another year because we were like, should we move? We're like, no, but this apartment's too small. Yeah, we're just going to suck it up for another year. I don't have any great plans, and I don't think that even if I did move, that we would really end up with a large kitchen. It's just not. I guess it's not my priority at this point, because it's like some close part of my identity, but I think once you learn how to cook in a small kitchen, you don't look around and go, why don't I have 18 cabinets? You know, I'm just not used to it, and I feel like there's something kind of cozy about getting to being able to reach everything that you need. I wouldn't mind having a refrigerator that doesn't freeze things in the back and a freezer that actually froze things in the front, or maybe having enough cabinet space so I didn't have to have my dishes in the living room. But aside from that, it's like I feel like the kitchen and I have made peace with each other, and it's fine. We've like worked out our differences. And also I'm too lazy to move, so I might just stay there forever. Hi. Was it Jasmine or Jacqueline? Jacqueline asked if there was one moment when I realized that the blog exploded. That was tonight. So this is awesome. Honestly, before the book tour, I really had no idea I see the numbers like on the traffic meter, and I knew they were going up, and they were really big, and I was like, wow, that's a lot of people, but I know this can't be true or real, so this must just be like my parents reloading or my husband, because he hates working, just trying to see if there's new comments. And so it's really hard to have an idea of what it means, like when you're just behind the computer doing it from your living room. And it wasn't until I started the book tour that I realized that they are actual human beings, and you're all very nice, and you have great hair. And so pretty much this has been it, and I still haven't had time to process it, because it's like, it's just, how would somebody process this? This is like overwhelming and nice and really fun. Hi. Run and hide? Just kidding.
So I made all the celebration cakes from your section, so I'm the designated cake baker in my group, so they asked me to make their cake, and I poured over your tutorials, and Swiss meringue buttercream scares the bejesus out of me. What suggestions do you have for that and just to make my life easier in the next 6 months?
And your name is?
Jackie
asked, Jackie said that her friends have asked her, they just got engaged, they've asked you to make their wedding cake. And I was just joking. I actually think that it's not terribly difficult, and especially if you've made a couple celebration cakes before. I think that you should do the baby batch of Swiss meringue buttercream until you get it right. Because I think that it scares you, and that's why it'll be twice as fun when you do. And you'll be, like, super triumphant. You'll be doing your, like, Swiss meringue happy dance. Something else I will not be showing you guys, but I had one. And I think it's – you know what's really great about it is that it's not terribly sweet. It spreads like a dream, and it keeps really well. Like, it can really be out. I mean, obviously, under the hot sun, it will probably, you know, but outside of, like, a steaming hot day in the sun, it keeps really well. It doesn't crust. And it pipes really nicely. And that's the main reason why I think it's very used very frequently. Somebody else pick. I'm not going to be the bad guy. After that, though, they just pick a cake that you love. And, you know, you can. It's the nice thing is you can always do tiny tests. And if you start getting panicked, just remember it's really just three cakes or however. How many tiers are you doing? Exactly, because then it's even easier. It's literally what you've already done. And you can totally make the cakes in advance and wrap them up and put them in the freezer and frost them the day before. And it's just, it doesn't have to be very stressful. And you will go through more butter than you even thought was possible. It's like unbelievable. Okay, somebody else pick the last question because I can't. Hi.
I was wondering if you ever go through a cooking rut where you just don't want to cook at all for extended periods of time, and how you get through it, especially with the stress of having a blog, like the added pressure that you have to be turning something out.
What's your name?
My name's Margaret.
Margaret, nice to meet you. Margaret asked if I ever go through cooking ruts. And what do I do to get out of it? And I actually go through them all the time. So the funny thing is that when I'm out traveling on book tour, all I want to do is cook. I have so many ideas. I'm jotting them down left and right. I'm like, I'm going to go home and I'm going to cook so much. Then I come home and I want to do nothing. Like, nothing. And so what ends up happening is that we order takeout for a couple nights. And one night we eat really bad Thai food. And the other night we eat really bad sushi. And the next night I go, oh, my God, I just can't deal with this. And then, boom. And then I make the thing, which is like, this is the only thing I feel like making. And it ends up being the thing I was really supposed to make. So what's really nice in any situation where you're feeling pressured is to find a way to release the pressure valve, you know, without feeling like, I have to update my site, you know, like just to give yourself a break whenever you need it. So when you're ready to do it, you can enjoy it more. And if it goes on longer, I guess you guys will figure it out because it's going to be really quiet on the site. Thank you. And you guys, if you have any more questions, just ask me when you come up. I'd love to answer.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour.